Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts.
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who.
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not.
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcast. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
All right, now, thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, Tate, and I got my good buddy here, Will, with me. How you doing there, Will?
I'm excited. It's almost a new year, and there's a lot of big plans for the coming new year and a lot to talk about.
I am polar opposite of excited because of the fact that I, for the last 3 hours, have been doing push-ups. Yes, it took me 3 hours. No, it actually didn't take me 3 hours. It probably took me two hours? Two and a
half? Yeah, 2.5. And we talked a lot, so we were buying some time.
So, to fill you guys in, Will and I had a bet. And I took the bet that I thought Holly Holm would beat Chris Cyborg. Which, just to let you guys know, if you didn't watch the fight, I don't know why you're even listening to the show, but... UFC 219, Cyborg won a unanimous decision over Holly Holm. And we had a bet that if Holly Holm lost, I would have to do 150 push-ups in 3 hours. I ended up doing 155 just to be safe, just in case there was a miscount, something weird happened on the replay. I wanted to make sure I covered my end of the bet, but I just finished it. How did I do, Will?
You did pretty good. I was actually very proud of you. I liked that at the end you had to take a little bit of break because that showed that it was the perfect amount for the bet. So I was really enjoying that.
It was one of those mental breakdowns. I'm cruising along and I'm doing every so many minutes, I'll knock out 25, then come back, knock out another 25. And it's just, you know, business as usual. I'm doing good. And then I got to that last 25 and I'm going through and I'm doing them. And it was either you or Sarah from the MMA, Women's MMA podcast says, you only have 4 more left. And I don't know why hearing the word you have 4 more left was like a mental barrier for me, but I could not do another one. I had to stop 4 short and take a rest.
Which you were in the zone. You just pushed him out. He got up to 21, and then we saw a little break at the top, and we're like, oh, you have 4 more. We both said it. And then you just hit that mental wall, and you had to take a break, but you did 10 more after that, so...
Yes,
perfect.
And I did the extra 10 just in case. I just wanted to prove, make sure. It was more for myself, but just in case there was any question that any of the push-ups were not legit, I wanted to make sure I did a solid, true 150. So I did 155, 160 push-ups just to make sure. So so our audience know I won't cheat them.
Yeah, you're a man of your word. You're a man of principle. When we make bets, we follow up and pay out whatever needs to be paid out, and you definitely did so.
And it was definitely not going to be any of this double or nothing stuff. No, no. I'm like, I lost, and I hate losing, just to let everyone know. I do not like losing. But my thing is, if you beat me, and I don't lose a lot, but if you beat me, you have beat me, and I must pay my debt.
And if you beat me, I would have done my 300 push-ups, and I would have struggled through all of them.
And see, Will, if he'd have lost, because it was a 2-1 odds on this one, he would have had to do 300 push-ups in an hour and a half. So I would not have envied you on that one.
Yeah, I'm happy I don't have to do them.
Now, speaking of following through on what you need, you know, what you need to do and getting the job done. Chris Cyborg, she got the job done, Will. What did you think of the fight? I know we've talked about it a little bit. It's quite a fascinating topic because, I mean, she really did handle business. You want to go first on what did you think of the fight, first off?
First off, I want to say that was the most elite fight that I've ever seen out of a women's title fight, let alone any fight in general. It was as high level as we were going to get, and I was on edge the entire time. I was like, ooh, either way, if one of these fighters lands, they can end the other night.
You know, and when you talk about elite, I mean, the corners, I thought both corners were giving really good advice. Both fighters came in with a really solid game plan. This Cyborg did not take Holly for granted, and Holly sure as heck didn't take Cyborg for granted.
Yeah, and it was, while it may not have been a closer fight than I thought it was going to be, I was very surprised by both of them. They both showed the aspects that I haven't seen before in both in their previous fights, because the other fighter was able to challenge them to a point where they had to draw it and take something within themselves and show it in the fight.
Now, this is the fascinating thing about this. I think almost everyone agrees that Cyborg won. It's just there is a huge discrepancy on how they think Cyborg won. For instance, Will scored the fight 5-0. I scored it 2-3, or 3-2 for Cyborg winning. And then I know this, that a number of other sports writers had the range from Cyborg winning all 5 rounds, Cyborg winning 4 rounds, Cyborg winning 3 rounds, all the way to Holly Holm winning 3 rounds. There were some sports writers that gave the first 3 rounds to Holly, which I was a little surprised on. You know, we've talked about this a little bit, but give me your thoughts on why there was such a huge range of people that, thought it was a close fight to it was a shutout.
The close rounds were close, and the dominant rounds within that capsule, Cyborg was able to show and kind of dominate to a certain extent, that to the point where it wasn't a close fight. But on paper, and if you were to judge round by round, those close rounds were so close that I could have seen it giving that to Holly, and I can confidently say that I had 4-1 for Cyborg. But
So you did give Holly a round then?
Those first 3 rounds were so close that I wouldn't be confident in saying 5-0, and I'd have to rewatch it in order to give a solid 5-0. But I could give it 4-1 because I'll give Holly the benefit of doubt for one of those first 3 rounds. I don't see the last round being that close, but it was one of the closer ones. But it was a close fight on paper, but when you watch it in person and you see some of the shots landed and how they dictated the fight, I had Cyborg winning clearly. But if I wasn't doing that and I was just kind of judging it as a competitive fight and just enjoying the competitiveness of the fight and not really scoring every punch and looking at everything done minute by minute, it's a lot closer than it was.
Yeah, because, you know, when you look at it and you say round one, I gave to Holly, but that was a close round and I thought it could go either way. Round two, it was a close round, and I thought it could go either way, but I gave it to Cyborg. Three, once again, I thought it could go either way, but I gave that one to Holly. Four was clearly Cyborg. And then I thought round five was a really, really close, really interesting round, but I gave it to Cyborg. And, you know, but I could see how a lot of, you know, because there was a lot of press people had it from Holly winning to Cyborg winning all five rounds. I've never seen a fight with that many respected MMA journalists and people, you know, fight people that are in the know debating who, not just, I think 90% of the people all thought Cyborg won, but the number of rounds, I was surprised.
Yeah, there was it reminded me a lot of those kind of a historical fight, but Mauricio Shogun Hua versus Lyoto Machida. Mm-hmm. There's two different conflicting styles where Holly was kind of like Machida, where she darts in and lands accurate punches at times, whereas Mauricio Shogun Hua and Chris Cyborg are kind of the brawlers that look to land more damaging punches. And you kind of have to judge each round minute by minute in order to see wins, because it has to do a lot with the effectiveness and power. Those are the two things you have to judge. And as far as that goes, I thought Holly was really effective with her straight left and her high kick, but the power of Cyborg and some of the shots and the combinations that she was able to land when Holly was darting in, that favored the fight towards her, in my opinion.
Now, see, and I looked at it a little differently. I don't think Holly was effective with her high kick at all. And why I say that is, is that Holly came in and she had a really great game plan, but Holly came in really tight and really nervous. And I was expecting Holly to do a lot of leg kicks, a lot of oblique kicks, a lot of push kicks, all working the lower body of Cyborg. And that was kind of, it looked like that was the game plan. But I think Holly was so concerned about getting caught by Cyborg that she never really sat down on her shots, her kicks, like she's done in the past. So it didn't have as much, it was more about touching Cyborg than actually landing with power. And I think if she would have landed with more power early, it would have made Cyborg respect her, because, you know, Cyborg kept coming and coming. It would have slowed her down. And let me tell you, Cyborg landed some monstrous shots, but so did Holly. Holly, how often do you see Cyborg with a bloody nose? Holly brought it to her, but Cyborg was just too much.
Yeah, I didn't like the diversification of attacks that Holly had, and that's why I only brought up the left straight and the left high kick, because that was practically her whole offense the entire fight, and that was kind of sad to me.
That's because, that was part of me, in my opinion, that's what happens when a fighter is super nervous and super tight. They keep sticking with what's working, what they're most comfortable with. If she would have mixed it up, it was really important for her, you know, to mix it up, so that, kind of like John Jones, Daniel Cormier, John Jones would mix up from low kicks, the body kicks, the head kicks, so that Cormier didn't know where those shots were coming from, so that you could fire a shot, Cyborg would think it's a low kick, but it goes high and it lands. That's what the game plan was for Holly, but because Holly never implemented that, because she became very predictive, and at one point, Cyborg is actually kind of just taking an approach that once Holly engages, she would engage, because she knew Holly was so predictable that Cyborg knew when to throw. Do you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. And it was very interesting to see a counter fighter like Holly urged into being offensive.
Yes, because very much so.
That was smart on Cyborg's plan. She pressured her to the point where she would be in her face, but she wouldn't throw any punches, but she would threat. She would always be a constant threat for punishment. And that got Holly thinking way too much about throwing some leg kicks and all those different things that could have diversified her attacks. And Holly just kind of went back to throwing power shots with the left straight and the left high kick. And that was not good for her game plan. She should have totally done the John Jones plan against Cormier.
Now, one of the things that shocked me in this fight was that Holly seemed like the stronger fighter in the clinch. That was a shocker. And you kind of said it best in our conversation before that you're not sure if she was the stronger fighter or if she was a fighter with the better technique. But numerous times, Holly would push Cyborg up at the cage and hold her there. And Cyborg did something kind of smart. She didn't panic. She didn't get all crazy. She conserved her energy, but Holly held her up against the cage quite a bit. You know, even when you look at like control time, you say, you know, Holly, 3 minutes and 25 seconds compared to 43 seconds, for Cyborg. Even when Cyborg would put Holly up against the cage, Holly could turn her and hold Cyborg up the cage. I just was not prepared for that.
Yeah, that was very surprising for me. And Holly is super underrated in the clinch. And what's surprising is we've seen her in the clinch before, and we've seen her against one of the best clinch fighters of all time in Ronda Rousey, and she dominated her in the clinch. She was able to nullify her attacks, but I didn't see it coming against Cyborg, and that makes me think that some of Ronda Rousey's performances are underrated because she has such technique and core power to the point where it didn't look that impressive when Holly was able to nullify her attacks. But when I get to see it against someone like Chris Cyborg, who is a proven commodity in the clinch and in power and raw power and technique, the fact that she was able to get those underhooks and to push her around, and even when Cyborg decided to reverse the clinch and try to pressure her, she was able to nullify her attacks by putting her arms against her knees so there was no Muay Thai clinch attacks. I was very impressed with Holly's performance.
Holly is a lot stronger than I think anyone expected. And I think that is the biggest disparity in this fight, why the scores were so wide, because it was quite shocking to see Holly hold Cyborg up against the fence. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people gave Holly a little credit for controlling Cyborg. I didn't give, you know, in the first round, I gave her some credit for that. But my big problem was while she had Cyborg up against the fence, she wasn't doing enough damage. If she would have been doing more damage while she held her up against the fence, we would have a different fight. We'd have a very different fight.
Yeah, it was, for all intents and purposes, it was a hug that she was giving her against the cage to stifle her, maybe wear her down. But Cyborg realized that, and you could see on her look on her face that she's like, oh, I'm just going to take my time.
Yeah,
I know this is going to go by. She's not threatening me or anything. And when she wanted to separate, Cyborg would bring her arms over Holly's face and try to break the clinch in that aspect. But a lot of times she was okay with Holly spending energy doing that clinch work with her.
Yeah, Holly never made the clinch a dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
Holly just decided, I'm going to be the stronger fighter. I'm going to hold her up against the cage. And then when it gets a little dangerous or I find my opportunity, I'm going to get the heck out of here. And it was a good game plan. The biggest problem, I think, was Holly just came in too tight in the first three rounds. If Holly would have been a little bit looser and sat down on her punches a little bit more, I think you could have had a little more of a competitive fight. But Cyborg, let me tell you, Cyborg put together a perfect game plan. She didn't, no matter, even though Holly put together a really, had a good game plan and a good attack plan towards Cyborg, Cyborg was ready for this fight. She was never, you know, tricked into having too much, being overconfident. She didn't overcommit. She stayed in her game plan. What was drawn out, and she fought the perfect fight. And I really did think Cyborg fought the perfect fight. Now, with that being said, what's next for these two? With Cyborg, I really feel like her last two fights against Tonya Evinger and Holly Holm has made Cyborg become an even better fighter, which is scary to say. That Cyborg is now a better fighter because she fought Tonya Evinger and Holly Holm. What's next?
Well, there's multiple options. An option that was kind of intriguing in the past was Megan Anderson from Invicta.
Absolutely. And that fight was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't happen. And that's when Tanya Evinger stepped into place and took over the reins for that. But that fight is still on the table. And that's probably one of the most intriguing fight sets out there.
That is, in my opinion, that has to be the next fight. It's either Megan or I would say Kat Zingano, but I think it's going to be Megan Anderson. I'll tell you this. Let's say if it is Megan Anderson, and I think she's one of the most dangerous fighters for Cyborg because she's actually someone who is a natural. She's a big fighter. She's a big, strong fighter. So, you know, that makes her very dangerous because that gives her a puncher's chance. But if she gets past, if she fights Megan next and she comes out of this thing successful with Megan, that sounds like I said Negan almost, didn't it?
What a character.
Both are amazing characters. If she fights Megan next and she wins, Cyborg could literally be champion for a very long time. There's no one else.
Well, another intriguing fight that's been proposed right before Holly Holm and Cyborg fought was the fact that Amanda Nunes reached out and said that she would like to fight the winner.
Right.
While I'm not as intrigued with that fight, that is a good challenge for Cyborg. I just think that Cyborg is an advanced version of Amanda Nunes. And I don't think that's a good fight for Amanda Nunes to take because it's just too much weight to put on and she would be at a disadvantage in practically every realm of the fight, in my opinion. That is an intriguing fight because Amanda Nunes is constantly improving as a fighter.
You want to know why I don't like that fight?
Why is that?
Amanda Nunes doesn't move the needle enough. It's a situation where the UFC is in a situation where you have a bunch of titles already tied up. So are you really going to tie up two more divisions with one champ who doesn't move the needle at all? And I'm a fan of Amanda Nunes, but... And also, you have a situation where if Cyborg wins, what's the big deal? If Cyborg wins, she's expected to win. She's not going to defend the bantamweight title and the featherweight title. So, if I'm the UFC, I'm not letting that fight happen whatsoever. It's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts?
I definitely agree because you're sacrificing the future of one division for a short term. Not even a considerable gain in making a quote-unquote super fight. So
and it wouldn't be a super fight.
Exactly why I put the quote-unquotes there.
The casual fan barely knows who Amanda Nunes is. She didn't get a big rub or anything from fighting Ronda Rousey. I just don't think there's a big enough pull to make that fight. And you already have the featherweight division, which is just empty. And then you have Cyborg beat Amanda Nunes and tie that division up. The women's division would just be a big stall. I just wouldn't even allow it. I wouldn't even consider it. I'd say absolutely not. I just wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, and another thing is that, like you mentioned, that division is so empty. Literally the only other fighter that I can truly think of that would be any sort of challenge to Cyborg was the former champion, Jermaine Duranemi, who has expressed that she doesn't want to fight Cyborg at all.
Okay. Let's say Jermaine Duranemi changes her mind and she wants to fight Cyborg now. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see that fight either. And the reason why I don't want to see it is because she was the flyweight champion and she gave the title up to just not fight Cyborg.
Featherweight champion.
Featherweight, yes. Sorry, I you know how those two are easy to switch, but a champion that would vacate her title so that she didn't have to fight Cyborg doesn't deserve to fight Cyborg. Let alone give her. So you can't reward her by giving her a title shot. Under no circumstances would I give that fight an opportunity as well. So if I'm Dana White, I've just ruled out Amanda Nunez, and I just ruled out Jermaine Duranemi. Holly Holm has just fought. Do you, you know, I don't think a rematch is in play. So there's just Megan Anderson.
There's Megan Anderson and potentially the only other person
that Kat Zingano.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing. I don't see the future in this division unless Megan Anderson is able to win and create kind of a rivalry with Cyborg.
And I think with the UFC, this is the division that they needed an Ultimate Fighter house for, is to put a bunch of featherweights in there, and the winner gets a shot at Cyborg. But then no one's going to want to move in that house to fight Cyborg, to get annihilated by Cyborg.
Yeah, it's just such an empty division at this point. There's not a lot of talent flowing into it. Cyborg's huge, and the people that occupy the 145 featherweight division, they're huge. Megan Anderson's huge. It's tough to be able to scout that talent, I think. And the only places that you can really scout talent with that is in a league like Ryzen, where Japanese MMA standards aren't at the same level as UFC standards.
And we're going to talk about Ryzen tonight as well. Before we go on break, what's next for Holly? Holly, and one of the things, this is one of those cases where the record does not reflect the fighter. But do you realize that Holly has lost 4 out of her last 5?
Yeah, and they've always been at high. The only gimme fight that she had was the best Kohea fight.
Yeah, because you look, she loses the title to Misha Tate. Valentina Shevchenko, she loses to. Then she loses to Jermaine Duranemi. Then she gets a pretty much a glorified tune-up fight. I love Paige Kohea, but that was not a matchup. And then she gets Cyborg. You know, that looks really bad, but when you look at, that's the who's who.
That's a murderous row of women right there.
Yeah. You know, and if you go back one more, you go Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate, you know, Valentina Shevchenko, Paige Kohea, Chris Cyborg.
Some of the greatest fighters of all time.
Of all time. So, you know, even though she's lost 4 out of 5 or 4 out of 6, I mean, she gets a pass because she has been fighting. I can't name another fighter, active fighter on the roster who has had a tougher route.
I still wouldn't give her a tune-up fight. I'd give her a high-level opponent, someone like a Kat Zingano, and if Kat Zingano is able to win her next fight, I would give her that fight. Then you would be kind of killing a contender right there.
Yeah, there's no way I'm doing that fight. Because you need a fight. You put Megan Anderson in there, and then you immediately let Kat Zingano wait next. Or you do vice versa. You put Kat Zingano in there, and then Megan Anderson. But if you have Kat Zingano fight anyone else, it's just chewing up a division that's already dead.
Maybe you throw in Tanya Evinger with her. They're both coming off of losses.
No, Tanya has a fight coming up. She's contractually, when she came in, that was one of the agreements, is that she gets to go back to bantamweight. Tanya is not going back. She's not a natural flyweight, so she's going back to back to bantamweight. And for anyone that knows Tanya Evinger, that bantamweight division is on notice. That's a very tough woman.
So, to be honest, would you, if you're a Holly Holm, would you go back to bantamweight? Because absolutely. That's your, yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That the next move for Holly is, you know, and she's already said she wanted to go back to bantamweight, but the UFC kind of talked her into going up. Holly is a bantamweight. It's crazy to say she's lost 4 out of 5. And now she deserves a shot at Amanda Nunez, but I would like to see her fight Amanda Nunez next.
I mean, the only possible contender.
Does that sound weird that she's going to get that put her up for a title shot again?
It's kind of like the Chael Sonnen effect. Right? you may be losing, but you still get the title shot. You know,
I don't know what it is, but you know, when I think about who do I want to see Holly fight next, it's Amanda Nunez.
I mean, the only clear contenders, if you want to say that, is maybe a Valentina rematch, but I don't think people want to see that.
Valentina's going down. She's moving down, so that fight's over.
Exactly, but that would be a competitive one again. The next one who's earned a title shot after multiple victories is Raquel Pennington. She's earned it based off of resume, maybe not at the skill level, but she has.
In the U.S., when you look at the world of UFC as far as looking for needle-moving fights, is Amanda Nunes or Pennington really a needle-moving fight?
Well, if we're going to do this, I keep
poo-pooing everything.
If we keep doing this based off of needle movers, we're going to have Holly Holm challenge for the next time title shots in featherweight and
next we're going to have Holly Holm fighting Demetrius Johnson.
Yeah,
Cody.
Then we'll just go back to Japanese MMA. So.
Yeah, and then next you know, you go once again bring in Ryzen. We have a situation where you're having, you know, a 50-year-old wrestler fighting pretty soon. That's, yes.
Let's get Gabby Garcia back in here.
All right. When we come back, we're going to cover some more of this card. We're going to talk about, because we keep hinting at the Ryzen card. And so we're going to talk about the Ryzen card. So stay tuned. And we will be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, we're back. And we were just talking about UFC 219's main event, Holly Holm versus, Bej Correa, Chris Cyborg. Why did I give Holly Holm the top billing? It should be Cyborg versus Holly Holm.
It's because you have a crush on her.
I sure do. One of the things I'll tell you, since this is the last show of the year, it's the first show of the year because this will go on tomorrow. This is the first show of the year. There's going to be a little change with the GSMC MMA podcast. Will, you know this. Will be going to China, so he won't even be.
I'm not going to China.
Oh, why am I sending you to China? He's going to Asia.
Southeast Asia.
Southeast Asia. He's on a world tour. And so, but one of the things that's going to change about the show is traditionally we have a show when there's a major event. And so we end up doing anywhere between one. I do anywhere from one to three shows per month. That's traditionally what's been going on this year. And we've had a lot of success and we've had some great rankings, ratings on iTunes. We've had a lot of really great feedback. And speaking of feedback, you know, if you're enjoying the show, we would love for you to go to iTunes and subscribe and get our show on a regular basis and give us some positive feedback. But the big change that's going to happen at the start of the year is that the GSMC MMA podcast is going to become a daily MMA podcast news program. In which the whole point is to keep you guys, everyone, up to date on what's going on in the world of MMA. So we're going to cover pretty much the main organizations, a lot of UFC news, some Bellator news, some Invicta, one championship. I still want to call it one FC, but it's one championship, and then Ryzen as well. Ryzen keeps coming up in our conversation. Are you noticing this?
Yeah, they be Ryzen.
And Ryzen. So we're going to start making the show a daily show Monday through Friday. And it'll be Monday through Friday. It'll come on at I believe it's 7 Eastern time, 7 a.m. Eastern time every morning. So you'll be able to get this show and stay on top of everything going on in the mixed martial arts world. So if a fight, if a new fight is scheduled, you'll know about it right away. Anything, any updates about, let's say, with Conor McGregor or Floyd Mayweather, GSP, you'll get all the updates on what's going on in the world of mixed martial arts. You have a one spot that you can go to get all the latest MMA news and get my takes as well. And then from time to time, Wields as well, because he won't be here every day. But when he gets done gallivanting around the world and he comes back, we'll be able to have him on a lot more as well. Pretty excited about that news. What's your thoughts?
I'm excited too. I can't wait to hear some shows while I'm abroad.
You know, because there's not a lot of shows there. That was the reason for it, is there's just, you know, there's a lot of daily shows that talk about football and basketball and baseball, but there's not a lot of shows that keep you up to date, up to the minute of what's going on in the mixed martial arts world. And fights get scheduled all the time. And things, cards get changed. This way, every morning, everyone knows what's going on in the mixed martial arts world. It won't be, we're not making it a 5-hour show or anything like that. Nothing, no offense against anyone that has a 5-hour show, but anywhere, about an hour show every day, just talking about what's going on in the mixed martial arts world. So that's our bit of news about what's going on for 2018. Now let's get back to 2019. Like that, the 18 or 19.
Like
you
like
know
that
how
transition.
I tied that in here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'm a trained professional now, I guess. Talking about trained professionals, dude. Khabib Nurmagomedov. Holy crap! Talk to me. What was your thoughts when you saw Khabib the Eagle fight this weekend?
He is an absolute animal. And when I say that, when I watch him fight, and I watched a lot of fights, when I watch him fight, it's like he's an alpha predator that just finds a way to kill its prey. And it's just, it gets to this point where he's just laying a savage beating, and it's so animalistic and so brutal that it seems like, oh no, it's time. We know this is over.
See,
we know it's over.
I'm going to jump in here and disagree with you. It's not a savage animal. Yes, it's a savage animal, but like when you say that, I'm thinking like, oh, a hyena's eating a gazelle.
He's savage in his skill set.
No. Yeah. I'm agreeing with you, but I think it's even a different level there. It's like Jurassic Park, and the T-Rex is just eating one of the little baby dinosaurs.
Yeah,
he just comes in and just devours.
Yeah,
he made Edson Barboza, which is one of the best fighters in the world, look amateur, like an amateur. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right.
This was a tune-up fight.
He's a little baby gazelle, and this lion is just tearing him apart.
Oh my god. All right, just look at the numbers here. I'm just gonna give you numbers. Okay, takedowns, they said 4 takedowns. It seemed like it was 40. Okay, total strikes, Khabib 154 to 25. That's, I mean, 154 to 25. Edson Barboza is one of the best fighters in the world, and he only landed 25. Second of all, this wasn't a stand-up battle where one guy was so far superior and he's just landing combinations and uppercuts and all this stuff and kicks. Khabib would take Barboza down and just pound him nonstop with nothing but vicious power shots on the ground. When you talk about control time, they said 10 minutes and 32 seconds of Khabib controlling Barboza, and Edson Barboza, 0 seconds of control time. How is that possible?
Because Khabib let it happen. He was willing to just let it stand up and impose his game there, too.
And, you know, he just, I can't, and it's bad to talk about, and we'll talk about Conor in just a second, But as I was watching Barboza, and I was like, okay, Edson Barboza is the best striker in the division. Him and Conor McGregor are the best two strikers. The best two kicks in the division. Him and Conor McGregor. And I watched Khabib walk through those kicks and walk through those shots. Did you see it? Like, it was in the, I think it was like the third round where Barboza hit him with that spinning kick. And it didn't even faze Khabib. Khabib just kept on coming like the Terminator.
That was what I was thinking the whole fight. He's a Terminator coming after him. This man trains with Cain Velasquez, Daniel Cormier, and Luke Rockhold, and nobody in his division can even muster up anything close to what they offer.
No, nothing. I'm going to say this. I was like, man, if I'm Conor McGregor and I got $100 million and I just watched the last two Khabib fights, I'm never coming back to MMA again. I don't even eat M&Ms. I'm done. I'm not coming back. give me your thought. What did you think of this?
I thought it was, if that fight was to be made, Conor versus Nurmagomedov, I would make Khabib the favorite, but I would also not make him that much of a favorite just based off Conor's resume. And I saw some openings there where Conor can capitalize.
And this is where I agree. There was openings, but the reason why I was looking at it as in shock was the big no-no in fighting is you don't chase and you don't follow. Khabib chased and followed Barboza, took shots from him, and it didn't even faze him. Do you think Conor has heavier hands than Barboza? That's a question that was going on in my head, and I hadn't had a chance to ask you this. Was because Edson couldn't keep him off of him. He just walked through him and just kept coming. And if Khabib can walk through those shots, what happens with McGregor? Because the big difference between both, McGregor's good for the first two rounds. His gas tank is questionable. Khabib is going to take him down at some part. If Conor doesn't knock him out in the first round or second round, Khabib's going to get him on the ground. And at that point, I don't see a chance.
Now, you asked me if I think that Barboza has more firepower than Conor. I wouldn't say so. Because there's two different styles of fighting that they have. Barboza throws looping shots, and he throws heavy, heavy, heavy spinning back head kicks. And
Conor's super accurate.
Conor's super accurate, and he throws straight line punches, and he relies on timing to really throw you off, whereas Barboza, he throws it out of nowhere with a lot of power and speed, and he relies on that.
Lightning fast. I agree with you on that one.
So, and the thing that I saw is Nurmagomedov keeps his arms right by his head, which was ultimately nullifying a lot of those head kicks, even though they can get through the guard. He was blocking them for the most part. So when you're throwing a lot of those looping head shots, Khabib can block a lot of them, and he sees them coming for the most part, whereas with Conor, it's coming straight down the pipe, through the guard that is open where Khabib is just looking straight at you. And you can't really defend that, especially with the range and power that Khabib has. Now, Khabib also has more pressure and more takedown skills than Conor will ever face, so Conor's going to have to be a real sniper for that, but there lies a chance.
No, and I agree with you on all of that, because that's one of the things I was looking at when I was watching this fight. I'm like, how do you make it so that Tony Ferguson or Conor stands the pressure of Khabib? And, you know, one of the things when you talk about what you were talking about the looping punches and things like that, I think if you go back and you watch the fights and some of the Khabib's fights, that was the way his defense was by design. He knew that Barboza loves to throw those looping outside round shots. So he kept his guard that way by design. When he gets in there and also he's working with Rockhold and Cormier and all those guys. When it gets time to fighting Conor McGregor or Tony Ferguson, they'll have a totally different game plan. So I still don't, I think they would already have that prepared in. I don't know. Do you agree with that part?
I don't see Khabib being able to change his default mode of that defense, because every fight that I've seen him in, he uses that defense to get in close with you and make you engage, and then he takes you down and he mauls you.
I tell you what, though. He better be careful. The one thing I don't mean to sound rude, but an animalistic attack on Barboza. But you can't keep chasing a fighter like that. As Fabricio and how it turned out when he was fighting in Stipe Miocic, you can't chase a fighter like he did with reckless abandon, without one day paying the piper. And that's where I say that Ferguson and McGregor has a shot. But when you look at what he did, he walked right through those shots. Barboza caught him with a spinning kick and another shot that I thought was going to slow Khabib down, and it didn't. Khabib just kept coming.
Yeah, I that's a tough thing for me, because I know that every chin has a point where yes. they can be broken. Every chin has a point, and you don't know the point of it. But if you leave yourself open for it, you're giving the fighter another chance. You always got that puncher's chance, but it's even better than that, because you're always letting it happen.
I have a smile on my face when you're talking about that. The reason why I have a smile on my face is the fact that you can tell Khabib has never lost in his life.
Nope.
Because he has no fear. Zero fear. It doesn't matter what you throw at me. I don't care. No, I'm bulletproof. No one has ever proven that they can knock me out. So I'm going to keep on coming.
It might be difficult for him to swallow if he meets somebody that can actually hurt him.
Yeah.
And that's tough to say who can hurt him when he's taking bombs from all three of his AKA striking partners.
Yeah, no, I agree. And apparently Rockhold and him train together quite a bit. Rockhold's a very sharp fighter. Man, when your training partner is Luke Rockhold, forget about everyone else. Luke Rockhold could be world champion very soon. Former world champion, one of the best fighters pound for pound in the world, and he's bigger than you. So you get to pay with one of the biggest, strongest guys in the UFC on a daily basis, and you've never lost. It makes you so dangerous.
And from what I've heard, they're actually highly competitive training sessions.
Yes, that's so, what Daniel Cormier was saying, that they're very competitive.
So when you have fighters that are 2, 3, 4 weight classes heavier than you, and you're making them super competitive, who is going to beat you in your division? It's hard to see.
Now, I don't like, that's why I'm saying I love Conor. Some of the new stuff that Conor's been doing has been kind of crazy. I want to see him either give the title up or you know, fight. But if I'm Conor, when you get that kind of money, the desire, the thing that made Conor great is Conor had the desire to fight and make money, and he was hungry. But when you got a big old belly full of food, the hunt is not that strong anymore. I wonder, that's my question. Is that hunt in him still strong?
I think he has some unfinished business in the octagon. I think all these words that people are saying to him, how he's not a fighter anymore, how he can't stand a chance against the real champions and whatnot, I think that's going to get to him ultimately. And I think that's what's bringing him back.
Fighters cannot... Conor has proven that you can't underestimate him. You know, and we've been spending a lot of time talking about Conor and Khabib. What about Ferguson and Khabib?
Well, first of all, if Conor was to make the choice of coming back, then Khabib would have to take a back seat, because Conor versus Tony would have to happen.
Yes, that would have to. Yes, I agree.
If I was Khabib, I would probably wait, but I don't think he wants to, and I don't see anybody in the division beating him, but I wouldn't also want to take on that risk, because you have a guaranteed title shot facing the winner of those two, if that was to happen. Now, back to your point of Khabib versus Tony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see that as a different type of fight than Conor and Khabib. I believe that Tony is willing and even more dangerous on the ground against Khabib.
Woo, really? Okay, let me hear why. Because I look at this fight as I think Conor is way more dangerous, and I don't think as I'm thinking about this, no, I was still on the ground. Khabib is a different animal than every person I've ever seen on the ground. I think he's the best fighter on the ground I've ever seen. It kind of reminds me of the old school Tito Ortiz before everyone got to the skill set where they're at today. He's doing the ground and pound like nobody else.
The only fighter that is that I can compare to him as far as ground and pound goes is Fedor.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Fedor in his prime. Fedor against Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. You check out that fight and you see some of the hardest ground and pound shots landed ever. Second best? It's Khabib. Khabib is probably better overall, but I would say that in his time, in his prime, Fedor had the best pound for pound overall. I'm comparing that to all the elbows and the punches that Tito Ortiz landed, all the elbows and punches that John Jones landed.
Mm-hmm.
I would say pound for pound, he just had a way of slivering through the guard and destroying folks on the ground.
Now, the reason why I laughed the way I did was, first off, Will was smiling at me when I was talking about Tito Ortiz. And so I'm like, okay, what's going on? And one of the things you guys don't know, whether it's, you know, texting or talking on the phone or whatever it is, Will and I always have this whole debate about Fedor. And Will loves Fedor, and rightfully so. He's a big Fedor fan. And so I was so far away from even considering Fedor in that situation, and he inserted in a Fedor comment. It was just priceless.
I'm going to sit down with you one day, and we're going to watch Fedor highlights, and then I'm going to ask you what can be done about this man in his prime. Nowadays is a different story. That's a whole different thing. But let's go back to Khabib and Tony. Tony is extremely confident in his jiu-jitsu on his back.
Yes, I agree.
He's a 10th planet guy, so he's taught by Eddie Bravo. And if you look at a lot of his previous fights and in his last fight against Kevin Lee, he was so much more dangerous on the ground than even his orthodox striking skill would allow him to be on the feet. So that would be a clashing matchup there, because I definitely think that Khabib is going to bring it to the ground. I definitely think that Tony would have some success standing up, but ultimately it's going to be a ground battle. And I think that Tony will pose some challenges that Khabib hasn't really seen before just because of the unorthodoxness of 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu.
All right, then here's my question. Tomorrow the fight happens. In a cage, you have Khabib versus Conor McGregor. And you have to pick one right now. Who's going to win?
Well, barring that someone's in fight shape.
They're all in peak, no injuries. Everyone's in peak shape.
Ooh, that's a tough one. But I'm going to have to say Khabib just based off of activity.
I agree. I take Khabib. I'm saying even with activity, even if, let's say, McGregor came back and had a couple of fights, I would still take Khabib.
What would your odds be, or what percentage?
I'm just trying to figure out where. Okay, so Khabib moves on from Conor. So Conor versus Ferguson.
I would take Conor.
Okay, so if you're saying, and then Ferguson versus Khabib,
I would take Khabib.
Okay, so if you're saying Khabib can be, you're in your opinion, Khabib is better than Ferguson and Conor, and I agree with you big time, and you will take Conor over Ferguson, which I agree with you as well. That's what I'm getting at. I don't see anyone stopping Khabib except for AKA.
Well, the thing is,
and the reason why I say AKA
is definitely the injuries and whatnot.
Yes, because everyone gets injured at AKA. It's one of the best training organizations you can find. It's just there's been a lot of injuries, and I think it's because they challenge each other so much. But unless an injury happens, I just don't see anyone stopping Khabib.
The thing is, I think that Conor has a better chance at beating Khabib then Tony has a chance of beating Khabib.
Interesting. Tell me why.
Well, I would take it as a... I would just go back to the striking department versus of Conor versus Khabib's wrestling. And I think that's closer than the jiu-jitsu department of Tony Ferguson to Khabib's wrestling department.
The reason why I agree with you is that when Conor is in the ring, and Conor says it better than anyone, he's very efficient in the ring, and he's very patient. Conor's not going to overcommit himself to get caught up, and Conor can finish and hurt you fast. If there's anyone that's going to... Khabib is more likely to rush in and walk into something with Conor than Ferguson is to get Conor on the ground and take him out. I mean, take Ferguson to take Khabib on the ground and take him out, or for Ferguson to stop him. I think Ferguson is the least equipped to handle Khabib.
Yeah, I think Khabib would...
And I want to make sure everyone realizes Ferguson, El Kakui, is a bad man. We're talking about truly the elite of the elite. So we're not bad-mouthing Ferguson whatsoever. Ferguson's just a bad man.
Ferguson is such a bad man that he has no fear to a certain degree, that he'll throw himself into sticky situations and be very risky as a fighter.
And that's what I think is dangerous for Ferguson, is the fact that he is willing to take those risks. And there's a lot of reward for that risk. But if you don't land on aces, you are done with Khabib. There's only aces or snake eyes when it comes to Khabib.
Yeah, and I would definitely think that Conor's hand is stronger because of just the type of fighter that he is versus the type of fighter that Khabib is. If I'm gonna go to war with somebody, I think I could go with Tony over Conor, because Tony is willing to go into those deep trenches that Conor may not be as much.
Okay,
he has the cardio and he has kind of the mentality that we have seen. Like, Conor struggles through 5-round fights and he has a cardio issue.
Yes.
Tony does not.
No, Tony and Khabib, there is no cardio issue.
If I was going to go to war with anybody, let's just get to be honest, I would go with Khabib.
Okay. Khabib now smashed. We're on the same page, because I'm taking... Khabib is so impressive. I think he's the best fighter on the ground of any fighter on the roster. I don't think there's anybody on the roster, that's including Damian Maya, that's Yoel Romero, Jacare Souza. I would rather on the ground, I'm taking Khabib.
I gotta go with you on that opinion too. Khabib smash. Khabib smash.
And now, when we come, we're going to take another break. But when we come back, we're talking about fighters on the ground and performing well. We're going to switch back over and we're going to talk about that Carla Esparza, Cynthia Carvia fight. When we come right back, just stay tuned.
This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA, it's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
All right, we're back. We just finished talking about, in the last segment, about Khabib Nurmagomedov, the Eagle, and his annihilation of Edson Barboza. And the next fight I wanted to talk about is that Carla Esparza versus Cynthia Carvillo. And Carla Esparza won the fight. And I was very surprised by that. I was taking Cynthia Carvia And when I watched the fight, I thought that Cynthia would just be too much on the ground. But Carla showed to be, you know, after the first round, Cynthia totally dominated that first round. But the next two rounds I gave to Carla Esparza. She was a bigger fighter. She was a much stronger fighter. What did you think of this fight?
Well, I've always thought that Cynthia Calvillo is overrated.
Oh, wow. Because I think she's so underrated, but go ahead.
I think that she's serviceable in all aspects of her game. She's a better wrestler than most women
okay.
are in the division, but she doesn't impose that much of a risk as far as damage goes, and she's not a finisher in my opinion.
And see, I look at it, I'm the total opposite. I think she's the real deal on the ground. I think like Uriah Faber said, she's a potential champion. So I think she's the real deal. And to be honest, I kind of felt the opposite way. I kind of felt like Carla was a little more overrated because she won the Ultimate Fighter, but Carla came and Carla really improved. And she really negated a lot of what Cynthia Carvalho could do after that first round. But I'm definitely very surprised that you say she was overrated.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Carla Esparza is also overrated.
Oh, wow. You're just throwing bombs today, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't think that either of these fighters is at the top of the division as far as contender goes. They do not pose a threat to Rose Namajunas or Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And I would even say that Karolina Kowalkiewicz destroys both of them too.
Now, see, and I look at it, I do not look at it that way. I look at it as, when you think about Carla Esparza, she's already fought Rose and she submitted Rose. Then when you look at, when you look at Cynthia Carvalho, every time she fights, she's getting better and better and she's getting stronger and stronger. You know what though? I'm a little surprised. I was thinking that she was a lot younger. She's actually 30. So she's a little older than I thought she was. I had her like more about 25, but so I was a little off on her age. But each time I see her, she's steadily improving. The only thing I was kind of thinking is they've been moving her along a little faster than I would have liked. I wanted to see her kind of slow down a little bit before putting her into a title situation. But when you look at this and with Carla Esparza winning, and with the fact that she submitted Rose, I kind of look at it as if Rose gets, it's Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Rose in the rematch, and then the very next fight, I think puts Carla Esparza right back in the title picture. You don't agree on that?
I don't, because you have Jessica Andrade in the waiting.
Yeah, you do have Jessica Andrade, but you also have a situation where Jessica Andrade has actually had a title shot, and she lost. Not against Rose.
She also just destroyed Claudia Gadelha.
That is true, and I think Claudia Gadelha is the best. Is one of the top two or three fighters in this division. It's a whole little thing called cardio is what's killing Claudia Gadelha. But with the fact that she was the former champion, and she won her title by beating Rose and stopping Rose, I think that puts Carla Esparza ahead of the line before both of those guys.
I can see how you do it in terms of rankings and history.
But you also have to take the new UFC, and I hate putting the little air quotes up, but the new UFC, you have a great storyline, you know, Rose Namajunas, Thug Rose versus former flyweight champion. Former bantamweight champion.
Not even bantamweight. It was
bantamweight. Yes,
are they bantamweight?
I mean strawweight. Former strawweight. I misspoke. Former strawweight champion Carla Esparza. The last time they fought, and they show her stopping Rose. That's a storyline you can get behind.
That's a storyline I can get behind, but when it comes to the technical aspect and the ways that Rose has improved back then because she was 19.
Rose is way better than she was that day she lost. I would agree. I'm not saying, do I think she can win the title? That's not what I'm saying, because I don't think she can win the title. I agree with you on that one. I'm saying as far as what's the next step for what I think the UFC will do, what's the more sellable, bankable fight?
I would give it to Jessica Andrade still.
You really would? Okay. Yes, that's an interesting one there.
Yeah, it's just she's a powerhouse. And you can give Carla Esparza Jessica Andrade, and that would be another what I would see is another destruction.
Yeah, I would take Jessica Andrade over Carla Esparza, but I'm just thinking as far as marketing and the overall, it's a good fight to promote. It would be Rose versus Carla. I think this takes Cynthia Carvalho and it moves her down and takes her pretty much. Her game plan was to be in title contention this year. With this loss, I think the chances of her getting a title shot now in 2018 is gone.
Yeah, I definitely think
before
so too.
The year before 2017 is over, I think Cynthia's title contention scenario was actually been ruined by 2018.
Yeah,
do you agree or disagree?
I definitely agree that she had a chance with this fight to catapult her to become the number one or two contender in the division.
Yes.
Not that she would be in a technical standpoint.
I can tell in your voice. See, I think she is. I mean, on the ground, I think she's just amazing. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of hers. But today, I tip my hat to you, Will, on this one, because she definitely won. I think she was very shocked. I thought the fight could have went either way. And I think she thought she won. This is one of the things that, you know, corners, I think if you're a good corner, one of the smart things to do is to bring in two independent people that have nothing to do with the friendship or the relationship with that fighter. Just bring in two independent guys that you can look over at, and after each round, they'll give you their independent opinion. Did you win that round? Did you not win that round? Because when you're a lot of times fighters are too close to the situation and their trainers are too close to the situation and they look around and they think our fighter won this fight. Because there was nothing, you could not tell Cynthia Carvalho that she didn't win that fight. But she didn't. I had Carlos Barza winning. And that happens too often. What's your thoughts?
I definitely agree, and I hope that she doesn't take the mentality, which ruins a lot of fighters, the mentality that you got robbed, and not make changes to your game. Because I feel like that may be what's going to happen. She's going to look back on this and still think that she won, and won't be able to get to reach the potential that she has. I think that she's overrated, I think that she has a higher ceiling than she's showing. And I don't think that she's close to reaching that potential yet. Yet she kind of fights with the pretension that she is at her highest peak yet.
See, and that's the thing. I think of her as the real deal. The real deal. I think she's good enough to be champion right now. Even though she lost, I think she can compete against anyone in the division right now. This is one of those times where we truly are parted on this one, on where we think the fighter is, and you have the upper ground today because Cynthia lost to Carla Esparza, and I don't want to take anything from Carla. Carla really showed a lot of improvement. But this is one of those one times where we are definitely under disagreement on that one.
Yeah, I think that styles make fights, and I think that if you made Carla fight the same people that Cynthia would fight at the top of the division, I think that Cynthia would do better. I think that she would be able to compete.
You say that correctly?
I would say if you were to look at them, even though Carla won this fight, if you make them fight 10 other fighters, not each other, if you make them fight 10 other fighters, I think Cynthia is going to win more and be more competitive with the other 10.
Okay, I agree with you on that.
But just because you're competitive, like, I guess Barboza was competitive with Nurmagomedov. But I don't think
he wasn't.
I don't think that's competition. That's what I'm saying. That's also what I'm saying.
That is not a fair comparison at all. I think that
Jessica Andrade, Rose Namajunas, and Joanna Jędrzejczyk would destroy Cynthia Calvillo just like Khabib destroyed Barboza.
And then see, I think that she'd be very competitive with all of them. So do you give Carla Esparza any shot? And first of all, do you think that she will get that title shot? And if she did, how do you think she would do against Rose?
I think that she would do better against Rose than she would against Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Claudia Gadea and Jessica Andrade.
It's one of those situations. I agree with you on that because it's one of those situations where styles make fights. And I think Carla's style matches up a lot better with Rose than a lot of other fighters do. Mm-hmm. And so it would be an intriguing fight that I would love to see. So I agree that it's one of the best fights that she could have, and it's for the title. So it's a good place to go.
If you want to build up Rose and you want to give her a chance to redeem herself from her previous loss and you want to build up her resume, give her Carla Esparza. That's what I think.
We're going to end this right on that agreement. On the next fight we're going to cover in this one, you pick between, Dukaze and Hooker or Condit and Magny.
And we can look at both of them in a vacuum, but the only thing I really want to say about the Condit Magny fight is that it's time for Condit. It's time for him to retire. It doesn't seem like he has that desire that made him be the natural born killer anymore. He wasn't going for the kill anymore, even though he was obviously losing the fight. And that's all I have to say about that fight.
Wait, let me jump in there real quick on that one. I thought this was a prime example again of number one, a corner that wasn't quite, I don't know if they were quite truthful enough with him, to put a true sense of urgency that, listen, if this fight in the third round, if this fight ends at the bell, the bell sounds and you have not knocked Magny out, you have lost. You must knock him out to win or you're done. And I don't know if that was really relayed clearly enough, because Carlos did not seem like, I kind of felt like I need to win this round, not knock him out. I felt like that was the thing that was going on with Carlos, that he felt like he needed to do enough to win the fight, win the round. If he wins the round, he wins the fight, not I have to knock him out or I got no shot. That's the one of the things that I thought was a kind of a disservice kind of vibe I got. And I know they told him they wanted a big round out of him, that he needed this round, but I think they should have made it very clear. KO or nothing. Second thing is, I looked at it, I didn't get the vibe that Carlos Condit should retire. I got the vibe that you have a situation where you have a fighter who has his feet and hands in a couple of different cookie jars, and he's doing a lot of different things, and he hasn't fought in 16 months, and there was a lot of ring rust there. That's kind of what I got. I thought... If Carlos Condit came back, and I think what this fight was for, to see if he still had the fire in his belly. But I think from what I saw, if Carlos Condit was to apply himself and make that his main focus, I think he's still there. It's not that I don't think the game has passed him. I just think he needs to change his focus. Agree or disagree? You look like you're disagreeing with me big time on this one.
Now, Tate, I said I didn't have anything else to say. I have two more things to say.
Because he's looking at me. He's mean mugging me over here. Like, are you making me say more than I wanted to say on this fight?
So I'm a huge Carlos Condit fan.
I know you are. That's the thing.
I pay attention to his career. I pay attention to what he's done. And the sad thing about this fight is that I would view this fight just like his early fight with Rory McDonald. Back in the day, they fought. Rory McDonald was handling him for two rounds. He goes back to his corner for the last and third round. Greg Jackson, who was in his corner this time too, urged him, you got to knock him out. You got to finish this fight. And what does Condit do? Vintage Condit goes out and knocks him out with a minute left to go.
Exactly.
And wins the fight. Now, Vintage Condit never needed to anyone to tell him to do that, but it did help that the corner did that, and you also have this mentality as a fighter to be able to do that, and nobody needed to tell Condit that back in the day. Especially, I've been following him since his WEC days and his early UFC days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next thing I want to say is that Condit himself has questioned his ability to be a fighter anymore. If you go back to the Damian Maia fight, where he got taken down and he got punched in the head, and he started questioning everything. He was actually dazed from that punch from Damian Maia, and he said in interviews, "Do I even want to do this anymore? Like, that was a hard punch. I don't know if I have it in me anymore to take that type of punishment." And what he's been doing in the last year or so is trying to find different avenues to be able to support his family, whether that was real estate, whether that was Nitrogen Coffee, whether that was another venture as a movement coach. I've been paying attention to him,
mm-hmm.
and he wants an out, but he can't afford to take a loss with a paycheck or the consistent income that fighting provides him, because he's been doing it for his entire life. He has a family to support. He has a kid that he needs to support. He has a wife that he needs to support. And when you take that all into a vacuum, I don't think that he truly wants to be in this fight anymore. I watched his lead up to the cage. I watched him and I compared it to all the different times that I've seen him in the cage. He does not have that hunger, and he has lost that inherent fighting spirit that made him a great fighter in his prime.
It does make you, you know, that's one of the things that even, you know, when I was looking, was one of the questions that I had was, does Carlos really want to go back into fighting 100%? Because you can't halfway do it at the level that Carlos is at. And he has to, you know, I believe he has two different careers outside of the UFC. And I think it pulls him a lot of different directions. But I don't know how well they're doing, because this, I was surprised that Carlos came back for this fight in general. And with this being a loss, I think if you look back, I think if he watches this fight, he'll see that, you know what, if I applied myself and put a little bit more effort in this, I should have won this fight. Does that give him the fire in the belly to say, I'm going for it, or this is it?
And that's up to Carlos to decide. As a huge fan, I wouldn't want to see him in the cage again. And just to express how dire his money situation is, or I don't know if it's dire, but I wouldn't see the Vintage Condit take an opportunity to get a sponsored music deal. If you listen to his entrance, that song was actually, somebody paid to be a sponsor to play that song. And it was horrible.
I didn't know about that at all. That one slipped right by me. I didn't know about this at all.
I don't know what type of music that was, but it was absolute garbage, and it wasn't the normal entrance song that Condit takes, and he literally got paid to play that. And when you're getting paid to do something and change a routine, or kind of compromising your person, as yourself as a businessman and the way that you conduct yourself, I think it's time to take a look and go all in into something else.
All right. And that's going to be the final take on that one. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to finish strong with two things. We're going to talk about the Hooker-Dukesi fight, because we ended up a little bit longer with this Carlos Condit situation. And then we're going to talk about Ryzen FF8 and Ryzen FF9. We'll be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC, Invicta FC, Bellator, and ONE Championship, we got the fights covered. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, we're back, and last segment, Will just shocked the crap out of me because he said that Cynthia Carvilha was overrated, which then shocked me. Then he also said Carlos Esparza was overrated, which then shocked me. And then he also said that Carlos Condit should retire, which then shocked me. So, Will is in rare form today.
I feel very strongly about all of those opinions.
And I just feel shocked. And speaking of feeling shocked, Dukaze versus Hooker. Mark Dukaze was a little shocked. What did you think about the Dan Hooker versus Mark Dukaze fight?
I thought it was a specialist striker meeting a well-rounded opponent. And when I say specialist striker, Mark Dukaze has shown that he has the ability to stop anybody, but he's fallen in love with his own game and a similar fighter.
With the show,
yes. and throwing singular strikes. A fighter that he exactly reminds me of is Uriah Hall. He has the ability to beat anybody on a given night. He has the talent there, but he falls in love with watching what he just did.
That's kind of funny because I said... when I was watching this, I'm like, he's starting to remind me of Anthony Showtime Pettis.
Yep.
You know, where he's kind of fallen in love, and Dan Hooker stopped him in the third round at 4 minutes and 18 seconds with a power guillotine. And I kind of felt like Dukaze was really starting to come on strong when he got caught. Dan Hooker's just a really well-rounded fighter. He's a solid fighter, and it was one of those things where you had a guy who had power, speed, and athleticism versus the technical skill, and technical skill won out. And when I look at Dukaze is a very talented guy who could be one of the big stars in the UFC, but I feel like he needs to go back and overhaul his game a little bit. One of the things I would love to see him do with his camp is either move camps, or I know it's the beginning of the year, I would take most of the year off and kind of refine my game a little bit, because that's his last two fights. I feel like he has lost strictly because of, you know, he's more caught up with the flash. He's more caught up with the spectacular move and less about the technical side of the game. And it's cost him. I think the carelessness has caught him. Like, he should never got caught in that power guillotine. Under no circumstances, I didn't think he should have been caught in that. And that's where going back to the drawing board and spending more time in camp, I think, because he's young and he has, you know, when you're such an athletic, gifted freak like he is, and I mean that in a complimentary way, you skip some steps. And now that he's had two losses in a row, it's time to pull him back in and get back to the basics, I think. If you do that, if you can pull back. And, heck, I would love to see him not fight, you know, just spend time working on the basics until this time next year. Take a year off and just work on the basics. this guy has the ability to be a champion, kind of like Max Holloway. Max Holloway has all the basics down. This guy has that kind of power, speed, athleticism to be a champion, but you can't skip the steps, and that's kind of the way I feel about him. Hooker, what's your thoughts on him? What are your thoughts on, I'm not calling you a hooker, I'm saying Dan Hooker. What's your thoughts? Because he looked great, and he caught him in the guillotine. He won. What's your thoughts on him, and what's your thoughts on what I said about Mark Dukesi?
I think that Hooker is a very well-rounded fighter. And I don't think that he gets to the upper echelon of the division. But I think that he's a well-rounded fighter to be able to be very entertaining. I'm not as interested in his career as much as I am in the potential of Dukesi.
Right. You know, and I look at Hooker and I say, he's a big guy. He's very big for the division. But I don't see the upside like I see with Dukesi.
And a lot of it is, like, you can say that someone has all the talent to be able to be the best. And that's what, like, that's the level of talent that Dukesi has. Now, what you can't say is if he has the mentality to be able to go back to the drawing books and craft a way for him to fill up all of his holes and be the best fighter he can be. That determines whether you're good or great or the best. And I don't know if that's what he has. And that's something that every fighter is different on. And I don't want to be able to look back on someone like Dukesi's career and say that he could have been something, because he has everything that he can. He has everything in place, but he just needs to get more experience, and that might change his mentality.
And see, and this is the reason why he's only 24 years old. He has plenty of time, but you don't want to put him in a situation where he's falling back because he's taking these losses, where it's just a few minor little tweaks here and there that can take him from a contender or a guy that's on, you know, on the card to a guy who's headlining the card. This guy is a headliner if he fills in those gaps. And so that's why I'm a big fan of his and want to see him kind of shore himself up. Anything else before we move on to MMA Candy?
Let's go on MMA Candy. That sounds very enticing.
All right. So the MMA Candy of the week is we got to close the year off with two rising events. Not necessarily back-to-back, but there's a day in between. Ryzen FF8 and Ryzen FF9. And this, when you think about Ryzen and you think about you know, the old days, who'd Ryzen, the old owners of Ryzen, what's the organization again?
Yakuza? No.
No.
Sakihabara. Sakihabara, the previous owner and director of sorts of Pride.
Yes. That's, I was trying to get to Pride. It brings back the old Pride days. And they didn't disappoint here. You had controversy in the ring and out of the ring. The first situation is you had Gabby Garcia, and the big thing was she was going to be fighting a 50-year-old wrestler. And Gabby, if you don't know who Gabby Garcia is, she is the biggest, and I mean in size and muscle. She's a big, strong woman. And she was supposed to fight. And she goes in to weigh in, and she's 27 pounds overweight.
Yeah, 26, 27.
So she wasn't 1 or 2 pounds overweight. She was 27 pounds overweight, which was a big controversy, and the fight didn't go off. And she had a tearful apology and everything. How the heck do you end up 27 pounds overweight? I mean,
that's just unprofessional. Just, I don't even know. I mean, you get an injury. That's the only thing that I can think of. And it's not even a...
You get an injury or a double-double with cheese.
Yeah, you fight Chris Cyborg, and you train with Chris Cyborg. You might want to get both of those.
Wow. I mean, I was so stunned at how overweight... I mean, she's not... And she's a very muscular, very fit woman. So she's not, I don't mean as in like she's overweight, as in like not fit, but she's a very, very strong, muscular woman. But they should not even, this fight should not have even happened if she was going to be that far overweight.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that the fight was arranged at a catch weight for Gabby Garcia at 209 pounds.
Right. That's, you know what? That's a great point that I left out, is that the catch weight was 209.
And let's be straight. Only one person is going to be close to 209, and that was Gabby Garcia. The other grandma or lady or older, whatever you want to call her, was not even close to that weight. Not even close.
Wasn't there like a 70-pound weight difference
here? I don't even know, but that's what I love about Pride sometimes. I mean, oh, Ryzen.
Pride Jr.
Yeah. It just gives me good flashbacks of some of the crazy fights that they put on.
And then we went with more craziness to kind of went on at Ryzen, where we had the weigh-in, where one of my favorite nicknames, former UFC fighter, Uncle Creepy, Ian McCall, which I do love the name Uncle Creepy. And Ian McCall's had so much bad luck, just bad luck on top of bad luck with a side order of bad luck. And so he's no longer in the UFC. He's over at Ryzen, and he gets into it with his opponent during the weigh-in, in which they almost go to blows. Matter of fact, there was a shot thrown, wasn't there?
I think Manel Cape, is that, if that's how you pronounce his name, slapped him in the back of the head, and then Ian McCall retaliated with a pretty fast punch slap, and I was really surprised to see how fast it was, but they're fighters, so it was very entertaining to see that.
And then we get to the fight. And so the fight starts, and I'm looking forward to seeing Ian McCall, you know, and I'm happy to see him back in the ring. They get in the corner. Ian McCall kind of lunges at him. His face goes kind of between the ropes, and it slides across the rope. Ian McCall stands back up, and his forehead is slit wide open, and he's bleeding like crazy. The referee stops the fight. The fight has been stopped because Ian McCall was cut by the ropes. The ropes slit his forehead open, and they had to stop the fight. So I've never seen a fighter get cut by the ropes before, but that happened. So more bad luck for Ian McCall. And so he ended up losing the fight.
And it was sad because he was one of the favorites to make the finals.
Yes. And clarify when you talk about the finals and everything so that everyone knows.
So they created a flyweight tournament to determine who was the best of the best of the flyweights in the Ryzen organization. And there was about three fights on each side of the tournament to be able to make the finals. And on one side, you had Kyoji Horiguchi, if you guys remember him. He fought for the UFC title against Demetrius Johnson. Was able to put on a good performance until he lost in the fifth round by armbar. And he was a free agent after that fight. And he eventually went to Ryzen, where they would pay him a lot more money. And he would be back home in Japan. He was eventually able to knock out all of his opponents, and he would later go on to choke out the person, Manel Cape, that Ian McCall lost to. He would knock out two more individuals, and he would become the champion, which he was already of the organization.
And then there was another tournament that went on as well. There was they had the Ryzen FF, the Ryzen Atomweight title. And you had who I thought was going to win it. It was Reyna, how you spell her? Say her last name.
Kubota.
Kubota. And I thought she was favored to win the whole thing. She was looking good, and she was upset by, give me a name there,
Kana Asakura, a wrestling standout.
I could not get the names are challenging with Ryzen, but that was a really good one. Other fights that went on. You also had Cindy Dandois, who actually fought on the Ryzen card, and she won a split decision. Did you watch the Cindy Danbois fight at all?
I generally don't watch Cindy Danbois fights.
You are in rare form. Cindy Danbois, she won a unanimous decision, former Invicta FC veteran. She's best known for fighting Megan Anderson and beating Megan Anderson when Megan Anderson first came to the States to fight in Invicta. She had one fight at the UFC before she was let go. And it's kind of funny. One of the things about Cindy Danbois, not only did she win, but even this morning they were having Megan Anderson and her were having kind of a Twitter battle this morning, where Cindy was saying that Cyborg should fight the best 145 fighter should fight the best 155 fighter, and she kind of implied, you know, she's already beaten Megan, and Megan got on and talked about how, you know, you fought me almost 2.5-3 years ago when it was one of my first fights in the United States and Invicta. And, you know, and she wanted to have the rematch and Cindy didn't want to have that rematch. And now that Cindy's out of the UFC, Cindy's desperately trying to get a fight to get back into the UFC. So that there was the little Twitter bad blood that was going on there, but Cindy had her fight and she won. And then the last fight I wanted to talk about is Marco Krokoff, which has been, you know, legendary Hall of Fame fighter. He fought and he had a spectacular fight, a spectacular KO, and he won his fight. Anything you wanted to add here before we wrap things up?
Well, another fight that I was really a fan of is Tenshin Nishikawa. He's an amazing kickboxer. I think he's fought over 100 fights in kickboxing, and I believe he's won most of them. He's undefeated in MMA and kickboxing. And he's just an absolutely amazing fighter that knocks out opponents within the first minute. And he has these showy techniques, but he's also pinpoint accurate with them. When we're talking about flying knees, spinning back kicks, and things along those lines. Tenshin is a really good fighter to watch and a rising fighter because he's very young and he's had a lot of experience too.
And one more thing, Marco Krokoff, he actually, when the person he knocked out who was it? Who did he beat again? I forget his name now.
He technically beat Fedor.
No, this fight at Ryzen. Who did he fight again?
Tsuyoshi?
Yes.
Kosaka?
Okay, yes, and he knocked him out in the first round.
Yeah.
And then Krokoff, you know, he hurt Fedor, is Will's favorite fighter on the planet.
Well, Kosaka was the first person to beat Fedor, if I believe, because he beat him by cut. They would later rematch, and Fedor destroyed him. Just absolute destruction.
So, all right, so this concludes our show. We just wanted to talk a little bit about that Ryzen, just because of the fact that, you know, Ryzen makes you think about all the good old Pride days. Once again, just a reminder that the GSMC podcast, MMA podcast, is going to be changing its format and going from where we were just covering the major pay-per-view events, where we were coming in and doing anywhere from 1 to 3 shows a month, to now we're going to be a more of a daily show, where we're talking about everything that's going on in the UFC, fight announcements, or just more, making it more of a MMA news program where you're up to date on everything that's going on in the mixed martial arts world. Once again, we also ask, if you enjoy the show, please go to Apple iTunes and subscribe to the show, because we will be doing this on a daily basis. And if you're enjoying it, please also put in comments, nice comments, because it really does help us out. With that, this concludes our show. This is the first show of the new year, and I believe, will we have you anymore, Will, or is this the last show before you go off on your whirlwind tour?
This most likely will be the last show, unless something groundbreaking happens within mixed martial arts in the next 10 days or so.
All right. And do you want to tell everyone where you're going, or are you just going to keep that private?
Well, I said we're going to Southeast Asia. I'm doing a 6-month backpacking trip. Starts in Thailand. Then we go to Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, and then we ended off in South Korea and head back to the States after that.
Now you see why I say it was a war. It's a whirlwind tour of Southeast Asia. You're going to have a blast, my friend. Look forward to having you when you come back. And if there's something come in before you leave, we'd love to have you. But enjoy your trip. You know we'll be talking as I get updates on how things are going for you on your trip. But for everyone else, thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concept Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. And to all, have a good night.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.